Hello, Graham. Are you on the line?
Yes, Courtney. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for being able to make it. So I want to start by asking you about over the past 10 years, there have been three separate prison fire incidents. On the evening of February 14th of this year, over 350 inmates were either burnt or shot to death while at the Comayagua prison when it set ablaze. Rights Action funds and supports community control, development, environmental justice, and human rights projects in Guatemala and Honduras, as well as in Chiapas and El Salvador, and carries out education and activism work in the USA and Canada related to global human rights, environmental, and development issues. So, Graham, you're the co-director of Rights Action. You've been there since 1995. And so I'm wondering if you can first talk about the conditions of the prison before the fire.
Terrible.
Just
awful prison conditions. And this is not uncommon in a number of countries in Latin America. And it's certainly been true in Honduras for quite a long time. As you mentioned, this is not the first sort of mass killing of inmates in a prison. It's the third time in the past 9 years or so. And when I say mass killing, I think it's an appropriate way of referring to it. I mean, there's some elements of this fire and resulting deaths that might be due to accident, but when you take a step back and look at it as a whole, it really should be considered a mass killing. And it's due to the underlying conditions in the prisons, but it's due to very structural and systemic political issues in the country.
Does this this incident qualify as genocide then, when you talk about mass killing?
Probably not. If you get into, I suppose we could get into a discussion of how do you define the word genocide. I don't think it would in this case, even though it would be a targeted population group, the prisoners. But it's not. I don't think it would qualify as genocide. I think it would qualify as mass murder.
Okay. Can you talk about, were there any emergency measures in the prison that could have helped to prevent the fire from happening or getting people out safely or protocols, etc.?
Well, I think it goes back to the role that prisons are playing as a whole. I mean, there's many things that they could have and should have done, like opening the prison cells with their keys and letting the prisoners out. I mean, to say that they weren't following protocol is stating the obvious, because they literally refused to open most of the prison cells. And when prisoners were able to bust out through the roofs of their prison cells, they were shooting at them as they were trying to escape the burning inferno. So they were obviously not following any minimal standard or protocol for security. And so the underlying issue goes back to what's the political climate? What is that characterizes the prison complex in Honduras? And what is the prison climate that characterizes the treatment of these types of prisoners? And it's an extremely negative, abusive political climate. And so the prison authorities from the top to the bottom are the ones that should be held responsible for this.
Can you give us more context of the larger political situation in Honduras then? Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, like Honduras has always been, it's known in generic terms as the second or third poorest country in the Americas. It's got extremely high levels of poverty and exploitation. Many Canadian and North American companies actually have, investment interests in Honduras, and they operate there in conditions of very high levels of exploitation. And so the resulting levels of poverty in the country are very high, and that goes back centuries, generations, if not centuries. And in that context, you've got the prison cells, and so the prisons don't become a place where criminals from an otherwise healthy society get rehabilitated. Prisons in a place like Honduras become a place where the elites of the country throw the unwanted dregs of society and sort of figuratively throw away the key, throw them in there and throw away the key. Most of the people that were killed in the Comayagua fire had not even been found guilty of a crime. They hadn't even had charges, criminal charges, filed against them. And so quite literally they had thrown away the key on these people that they just wanted to put behind bars. And as we said at the outset, this is not a new issue, though the levels of repression and impunity and violence in Honduras have actually gotten way worse in the last 2 years since the military coup of June of 2009. There had been a sort of a semi-reformist, democratically elected government in power from 2005 right through to 2009. And even the small reforms that the government, the elected government of Honduras were bringing about were unacceptable to the economic elites, and they carried out a military coup in June of 2009. And since that time, the levels of poverty, repression, and violence in Honduras have gone out the roof. Even mainstream media outlets in the United States, like New York Times, Miami Herald, Los Angeles Times, are referring to Honduras as the murder capital of the world. It's known as the journalist killing capital of the world. It's been referred to as the LGBT killing capital of the world. Extremely high levels of repression and violence since the military coup of 2009.
And what has been the role of the international community in supporting or making things worse in Honduras?
Well, quite useless at best and quite negative at worst. And I think that the governments of Canada and the United States have played are playing a particularly negative role in Honduras today. The military coup of 2009 in Honduras was widely rejected by almost every government in Latin America. But Canada, the governments of Canada and the United States stand out as the two governments that have stood by the post-coup regime and have done the most work to legitimize the post-military coup regime and have even increased economic and political relationships with the post-military coup regime. So I think in no small measure, Canada and the United States are helping prop up this very illegitimate and repressive government.
Do you know or can you explain what is behind Canada's agenda? Or what is Canada's agenda that's sort of driving this decision?
I think that the one answer, the less important answer, but worth stating, is ideological interest. We have a very conservative government in place, and it is following, and the coup carried out in Honduras was carried out by very conservative wealthy sectors in Honduras. So I think right off the bat, the more conservative sectors of Canada and the United States would fall in line and support this coup for all the wrong reasons, but there would be strong ideological motivation to support it. But more importantly would be economic interests, and Canada has significant and growing economic interests in Honduras. There's extensive mining interests in Honduras, including the well-known case of Goldcorp Inc., which has a Canadian company that has a huge open-pit cyanide leaching mine there. There's the case of the sweatshop industries, the Maquilador sweatshop industries, and the Montreal-based Gildan textile company has a huge operation in Honduras. And there's the so-called new area of tourism. There's significant Canadian investor interests forcibly pushing indigenous Garifuna people off their territories on the north coast of Honduras so as to build timeshare condos and luxury Acapulco-type hotel complexes for the North American tourism industry, because the north coast of Honduras is along the Caribbean Sea. And so whether it's tourism or mining and resource extraction or Maquilador sweatshop industries, Canada has growing economic interests in Honduras. And the post-military coup regime is very favorable to Canadian economic interests.
Earlier this week, the Inter-American Commission for Human Rights had a trial for the 2004 San Pedro Sula prison fire in which 100 prisoners were killed. Have you heard any updates about how this trial went?
No. I mean, there might be a tiny sliver of hope there. That petition that's been before the Inter-American Commission of Human Rights for almost 7 or 8 years now have been sort of gathering dust, but it's been given a new injection of political energy because of this most recent mass killing in the February 14th Comayagua fire that we've been talking about. So there is a renewed sliver of hope that the Inter-American Commission of Human Rights might come down with a very hard and clear decision about the El Porvenir mass killing in 2004. But a decision is still pending. It will still take quite a while to work that out.
So beyond the keeping the doors locked when the fire started and shooting at prisoners that were trying to escape the fire, there have actually been reports by survivors that the fire was actually a premeditated incident. But there have been no further updates on this. Prison survivors have urged authorities to verify this information by checking the bank information about the prison director. But how easy is this to actually do? Will anything come of this, in your opinion?
Highly unlikely that anything will come of this. And I hope I'm wrong. I don't think it's a cynical comment on my side. It's more of a realistic one. And though I do hope I'm wrong, I think in the next year or two, absolutely nothing will come about this inside Honduras because it's an illegitimate, repressive, undemocratic regime that's in power. So they certainly have no interest in examining themselves in any open and fair way. And they're not really going to get pressure from the two most important countries that support them, i.e. the Canada and the United States. They're not going to get any real pressure from Canada and the United States to carry out a full and proper inquiry. And I hope I'm wrong on that, but I suspect that that's true for the next year and a half. This whole situation might change 2 years down the road after the next elections. There will be some very contested elections in 2013, and there is chance that a very decent political party should win those elections. If they are free and fair elections in 2013, quite a decent political party will win those elections.
Can you give us a bit of background on the elections?
The government that was ousted in 2009 was led by President Mel Zelaya, and he was from an oligarchic sector of the society as well, and he was an extremely wealthy man from a wealthy landowning family and a member of the Liberal Party. The coup itself was planned and carried out by sectors of the Liberal Party itself, sectors of the other dominant party, the National Party, along with the economic elites and the military. And I think it had some fairly, it had a two thumbs up from the United States as well. And so whereas many Hondurans were not huge fans of President Zelaya while he was in power, they respect for President Zelaya and for his wife, Xiomara Zelaya, have grown immeasurably since the coup because they took a very public and principled stand of condemning the coup and putting their lives at risk to keep on demanding truth and justice and a return of democracy. And so even as the levels of repression and violence in Honduras today are extremely high, there is a very powerful grassroots movement called the National Resistance Front that has grown up organically and continues to demand a return to democracy and the rule of law. And out of the National Resistance Front, but separate from it, there has been formed a political party that is still in the process of forming itself. And it's highly likely that the leadership candidate will be Xiomara Zelaya, who is the wife of the former president. And they're going to be a real political force to be reckoned with. And if there were free and fair elections, they would win the elections tomorrow, I have no doubt.
Graham, I want to thank you for reaching us over the phone today to talk about the prison fire that happened in Honduras on February 14th in the larger political context, and the conflict that's going on in Honduras. Can you lastly just give us some information about how listeners who are interested in your work can follow or support you?
I think they can. The best thing to do is to write me directly at info@rightsaction.org, or go to our website, rightsaction.org, or follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/rightsaction.org. And one way or another, that's how you get in touch with me, and then I would be glad to provide people with extensive background information about these issues and about what groups on the ground in Honduras are doing to demand a return of democracy and to demand justice for the abuses committed by the regime that's in power now.
Thanks a lot, Graham.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.